Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
Hey everybody, this is Lori.
And this is Abby.
Welcome to episode 43 of Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. Hope everyone's okay today. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here today. I feel like it's been a little while since we've recorded an episode.
I know. Abby and I are coming off a couple of vacations, which have been amazing, but yes, we are ready to get back to work. And how appropriate today that we're going to talk about memory.
Absolutely.
Abby and I are always complaining about how as we get older, our memory tends to fail. And having attention deficit does not help that at all.
No.
Because when you're not paying attention to something, it makes it very difficult to remember.
Exactly.
So we have got a very special guest today. Danielle Winton from Memory Strategies is here today to talk to us about all things memory. Danielle, hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. So I guess probably the best place to start would be just tell us a little bit about you and kind of how you landed where you are today.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird journey, but I was a teacher for about 10 years. I primarily focused on students that were learning English as a second language. And I taught abroad in Taiwan for a couple years, everything from 2 years old through high school. Then wow. I came back to the States and I was teaching basically high school and college level students. I also worked for the University of Missouri and I was teaching adults. So I've kind of had the whole gamut of ages. And I would say that the memory strategies came up when I was working with the college students. So I worked in a highly intensive English program. So the idea is kids come from abroad and they come to America and they have to master English so that way they're ready to attend a university in a second language, which is bananas.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty intense.
It is super intense. And the thing is that our curriculum was designed to be 9 months long. And the idea is that they could, you know, possibly take an additional month per class, which would lead to about 18 months. So they had 18 months maximum to get through the program, which again, a year and a half to master a language ready to go to college it's a lot of pressure. So I saw that my students were struggling. Obviously, the amount of vocabulary, the amount of grammar, it's overwhelming. And so I started looking at memory techniques that memory champions use. And so I was drawn in, like, again, kind of by accident. Like, there were like some TV shows and some cultural references. And I started learning about how these people memorize. And so, for example, the Guinness Book of World Records for number of digits memorized of pi.
I don't want to know.
Here, take a guess. Go ahead, take a guess.
25?
I was going to say, maybe someone could remember about 42 digits.
42 digits? 70,000.
Mm-hmm. No way.
Stop it.
I'm not kidding. And here's the thing. I got to interview a guy named Kevin Horsley. He broke one of the world records at 10,000, and it's gone up since then.
Is that memorizing digits that they've seen visually or that are verbally presented to them?
So they can, from what I understand, they can study however they want. But the idea is that they're locked in a room, they've got all their judges, they can't leave the room or anything, and they have to recite all as many digits of that number as possible. And it's a random number.
Crazy.
There's no patterns.
There's no patterns.
Cheating. It's arbitrary information that they have to remember. So anyways, I learned all of this and it fascinated me, right? Because all of these people said, I have a bad memory. I wasn't born with a good memory. A lot of them had learning disabilities. And what they found is that memory is a teachable thing. And so all these people learned techniques and tricks and tips and methods and strategies to tackle this big problem. So what I did, I decided I was going to try and memorize a shuffled deck of playing cards. So I shuffled the cards, memorized one by one by one, and within about 30 minutes, I gave the deck to my brother and I was able to recite all 52 in order without mistakes. And it was easy.
So, wow.
Yeah. And so here's the thing. once I realized, like, oh my gosh, if I can do this, I can teach my kids to do this. So I taught my students how to do it. Their test scores went through the roof. They were 300, 400% better. They were able to memorize so much more vocabulary because they'd been taught how to use their brain. So then I started thinking, well, instead of just helping ESL students or my classroom, you know, how can I help? Like what matters in this world? Well, students in testing, and then you have professionals that need to get licensed or certified in their field. And there's something, a test, in the way of them, you know, making more money or getting promoted. And so that's what I do, is I help people learn how to remember and absorb information and recall it when they need it.
So I have a quick question. So as you're helping, like, as you helped your ESL students memorize vocabulary, so they could memorize it, then they had it accessible to apply it later on. It wasn't just like memorizing for the test and then poof, it's gone. They actually were able to hold on to it and use it moving forward.
Right. So I would say that the initial memory techniques are different than the retention and review techniques, right? So there's kind of, I like to describe memory as a five-tier system. So I'll go through each. So the bottom one is rote memory. You repeat something over and over and over and over again, and that's a pretty boring way to try and remember something. Then you have the next level up, which I would call mnemonics. A lot of us are familiar with, you know, creating an acronym. Every good boy does fine always. Please excuse me, Aunt Sally, all that stuff. So that's where a lot of people stop, right? Like, if you think about most people, when they're set, when they're told, okay, you need to go study, they have a highlighter, they have some note cards, they have their textbook, and it's like, good luck. Most people don't go through a study class, and almost everyone hasn't been through a memory class. So if people knew what was available to them and they took the time to learn the skills, they would be so much better prepared for life in general. But anyways, I digress. So everyone kind of stops at that mnemonics level. Then we get into my bread and butter, which I would call visualization and association. So this is where you're starting to turn information and text into something more memorable. And that includes pictures and something that you can see, coding it into things that the student cares about. So the visualization and linking process is going to be different for every single person because your experiences are different from Abby's experiences, from mine. And so the system is quite personalized. You get to make it about whatever you want. So then once you get associations and visualization down, you get to the next level, which is storing and organizing. So that's where we get from short-term to long-term memory. How do I keep these visuals fresh in my mind? Well, you have to have a review system in place. And then finally is retrieval. So we talk about spaced repetition, which I'm sure you've heard of. There's a lot of different methods on spaced repetition. I particularly like the Fibonacci one because it makes the most sense with the forgetting curve.
You're going to have to tell me more about that. Tell me, what's the forgetting curve?
The forgetting curve, so, yeah.
I'm not familiar with it. Yeah. I am right at the bend.
I am on it too. I can't remember the Fibonacci sequence.
So the forgetting curve was discovered in the 1800s by a scientist named Ebbinghaus. And he basically found that we forget information at a really, really quick rate. So within 20 minutes of hearing something, we've already forgotten like over half of it. And so the idea is, we always want to review something new almost immediately after learning it, which is very counterintuitive because you think, well, I just sat through an hour lecture. It's been 10 minutes. I don't need to review. I just listened to it. That's not the case. We have to review immediately afterwards because that is what helps solidify it into our long-term memory. So reviewing right after new information is crucial. So don't wait until the next day. Don't wait until the next week.
Or the day before the test.
Test, right? Cramming is not great.
So something that you're trying to remember, if you review it immediately after hearing it, learning it, it increases your chance of transferring it from your working memory to your long-term memory.
Exactly. And so the Fibonacci sequence, it's a phenomenon that's found in nature. I think it's in flowers where it's kind of quadratic in essence. And so the idea is, instead of, let's say you learn something on the first day of the week, and then you have a test on it at the end of the week. So your review process should look like this. You review immediately after, and then you review one day after, and then you review 2 days after, and then you review 4 days after. And so you're basically increasing the amount of time in between your studying a little bit by a little bit. Does that make sense?
Following that sequence.
Yep.
Right, exactly. Because if you study just at the beginning of the week, the middle week, and end of the week, that's not great. You have to study a lot more in the beginning than at the end, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
That totally makes sense.
That does make sense. That's interesting. That's wow. Great.
And so what that does is when you have the correct spaced repetition review system in place, that forgetting curve gets less and less steep and you remember more.
That is so interesting.
So when you talk about memory and you work with people on memory strategies, which aspect of memory are you focusing on? Because we've all heard of working memory, short-term memory, long-term memory, or are you working on all aspects of memory?
That's a great question. And I've actually looked through a lot of different charts and it gets complicated quick because the types of memories and how they're consolidated, I mean, it's chaos. So the thing that I focus on that I like to differentiate between is episodic memory and semantic memory. So episodic memory has to do with what have you lived through? What have you experienced in life? So you reading a book with your grandpa at age 6, that's an episodic memory. But we process that information very differently compared to semantic memory. Semantic memory has everything to do with memorizing facts, memorizing dates, processes, order. So if I ask you what the 43rd president was, or if I ask you to remember the quadratic formula, those are semantic memory. So I focus primarily on semantic memory. So helping you remember facts for tests and anything related to that.
Okay.
We talk a lot about that though with our clients because we have parents all the time that will say, Johnny can remember our trip to Disney World when he was 3 years old and he can still recall details from it. And he's 12 now and he can't remember his spelling words. And we talk a lot about how, when you tie all those emotions in, mm-hmm. It's kind of a very multi-sensory experience. There's emotions tied. You're more likely to remember it. He's not super emotional about his spelling words. There's not a lot of feeling there, not a lot of meaning there, but that's a great way to differentiate as well. You've got episodic and then you've got these facts. But I do think the meaning, but you try to tie meaning to it, it sounds like, in some way.
Exactly. And so, one thing I hope parents can understand, or everyone can understand, is that they're processed differently in the brain. So for one person to be really good at episodic and bad at semantic doesn't mean that there's a problem there. It's that you haven't been trained in how to remember semantic type of information, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yes. So here's the really, really cool thing. I've done a lot of research lately because I had a webinar for parents and strategies for their teens who have learning disabilities. And one of the things that I found is that we can teach kids and people with ADD, ADHD how to grab their own attention. And that is by tying in meaningful, exciting things to really, really boring things. So that's a skill that you can teach.
Seriously.
That's interesting. So that's something that you can work on with clients as well, is how to grab your attention and ignite your attention.
Exactly. So I worked with a high school senior. She was dyslexic and she was really struggling in her history class. Like she wanted to pull her hair out. She just didn't care. Her mom was pretty desperate. So I worked with her one-on-one and I opened up the history textbook with her. We pulled out all of her history homework. I haven't seen this stuff, but it doesn't matter because I know how to take any piece of information and put it into my brain and make it stick to me. So now it was about, okay, what's important to this girl? So she was all about nature. She was all about I think it was Future Farmers of America. And you could see she got immediately interested in that topic. So, okay, now how do we relate these two things together? And it's, let's say that there's this random fact about, a president and a bill that they signed. So we look at the name of that bill and we think, okay, how can we relate? Even if it's crazy, even if it's weird, even if it doesn't make sense to any other person, if we can make those ties so that way when she reads the bill, she thinks of something funny. Now all of a sudden she's engaged and she's interested and she's being an active participant in her own learning as opposed to just passively reading some boring information about history. So that's what it is. I worked one-on-one with her about her interests, about the topic she was struggling in to make it more memorable and interesting so that she could take her education into her own hands.
That's really
and do you feel like then the students are able to make those connections on their own? You've given them the strategies and the tools. So moving forward now, she doesn't need someone sitting there next to her saying, okay, how are we going to tie this to, XYZ?
So for example, I have workshops and I have one-on-one sessions. The workshop is designed to be a very for the more independent student or professional, I give the tips and tricks. People can go apply them how they need to. There's other people that need a little more handholding and they need some more examples. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not a shameful thing at all. Mm-hmm. It just is a way. It's like a personal trainer. You know, mm-hmm. if you don't know what you don't know, and how are you going to get better if no one teaches you? So that's what I do, is I kind of handhold through the process. Let's do example after example. Okay, now your turn. I'm going to give you half of the problem and I'll walk you through the rest of the half. I'll give you 75% of the problem and walk you through the last 25% until they can start to do it on their own. So it's a lot of
emails.
And as a teacher, my job is to ask her a lot of questions so that way she's the one creating it mm-hmm. bit by bit. Because a lot of times I think parents, you know, haven't been trained in how to teach.
Right.
Because sure, telling someone how to do something and teaching them how to do it is two different things. And so there's a process of giving them a little bit more of the reins and giving immediate feedback and correcting and, repeating enough times to where they feel comfortable and then coming back the next week and doing a review.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much to even just the structure of how you teach that makes something effective.
Right. And we have... I see a lot of students that come in complaining about memorizing their multiplication facts.
I was just going to ask that.
Or their parents talk about how we've worked on them over and over again, like numerous repetitions of practicing these facts, and he or she still can't memorize their facts. So is that the type of thing where you can teach them to correlate something meaningful to it?
Or a strategy.
Or a strategy that can help it, you know, that they can remember it, but also not just remember it for the next day, but remember it for multiple weeks or months or years.
Right.
Life.
Yeah. There's a ton of different things to consider. So one, we've got to think about the age. If they're younger, there are things like songs and gamification that are going to really amp up their engagement in that mm-hmm. material.
Multiplication rock. I love it. There's a song. It's like a rap song.
Yeah. So if you go on YouTube and you type in song multiplication table, you will find all kinds of songs that you can give your kids. Now, if they're older, you know, songs probably won't work.
Nope.
So this is where we start to, one, let them be the driver, where instead of here, look at this table, have them create the table, have them design the table, have them put a theme to the table, something that's going to engage them. And if writing isn't their thing, then having them create, like I said, those visuals and those pictures, what can you associate with the number six that interests you? So that when you think of, you know, six and nine walking together, there's maybe two different people that you imagine. And then what happens? Something happens. And then you associate a number with that outcome. And mm-hmm. so then it becomes pictures. And our brains are really, really good at picking up visual information over text. Because think about it. If you mm-hmm. look at a dry, boring textbook, and all you see are words and paragraphs, as opposed to a photo that's crazy and colorful and chaotic, which one are you going to be more interested in looking at? The photo Absolutely. With the colors, right?
Right.
So that's Good what we're point. Doing in our own mind.
Hmm. That's interesting. You know, and we assess adults, as well for learning disabilities and ADHD. And I feel like over the last couple of years, we hear a lot of adults coming in complaining about memory. You know, they're not in school. They're not even necessarily studying for a test or a certification exam in order to get a promotion, but they're very forgetful and they have a hard time even functioning and being super productive at home and at work because they can't remember things. So are there different types of strategies for adults, or is it the same types of strategies?
Or maybe not so much when it's like facts you have to remember, but it's tasks or it's people's names or whatever.
Conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I could address all of those things. So, I mean, I've given workshops on just how to remember people's names. That's a skill you can teach. Same thing with tasks. So much, I mean, and this goes for people without ADHD. I mean, so many things are applicable to the human in general.
Mm-hmm.
And it's creating systems so that, you know, let's say you have a 10 thoughts in a day that's like, oh, I need to do laundry. I need to go get my oil changed. I have a blog idea that I need to write down. So you have all these thoughts coming at you. What you need is a system in place so that way as soon as that thought comes, you're not just putting it into a junk drawer or a note section. You're not just ignoring it. You're not just, oh, I'll worry about it later. it's got to have a place. So taking the time to develop systems so that anytime I have a blog idea, I know exactly the document I'm going to open on my computer that's only for blog ideas. Every time I think of, you know, an oil change, you can schedule your oil changes a year in advance. That way the whole year is taken care of. So, you know, not allowing life to blindside you because you know those things are going to happen anyway. Plan for it. And sure. You won't be sideswiped so often.
Sure.
This morning, I just finished a talk that was called Getting Organized So That You Don't Have to Remember Everything. So that was all it was about, is system, creating systems in our lives and our work and our home. So that
way. Well, and I think you're right too, because when we talk to these people, it really is talking about being reactive instead of proactive, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you had a system in place to keep this stuff sort of afloat and you were planning ahead, you wouldn't be blindsided. You're exactly right. And now you're reacting because, oh my gosh, I forgot. And that's all you can think about. Not that I just forgot to plan. I should have planned for it.
You know, here, I also found this really interesting fact this morning. The National Association for Organizational Professionals, they found that we spend 1 year looking for lost items.
Oh, really?
That's all?
8,700 hours of our life.
Oh, my goodness.
Looking for things because we can't find them. And so thinking about everything in your home, it needs to have a place. And then every thought that comes in needs to have an outlet of where it goes so that way you can let it go. So like don't have five different grocery lists in your phone and on the fridge and in an app. Pick one place and that's where it goes. It doesn't get three or four other options. There's one option.
That makes sense. Crazy. So was that a workshop? You said you did a talk this morning on getting organized so that you don't have to remember. Was that a workshop or a one-on-one session?
Yeah, it was a workshop. There's a girl here in my town. She runs The Hatchery. It's a co-working space for entrepreneurs and business owners. And so we just had a webinar.
Okay.
What about older adults who are starting to deal with age-related memory issues? Do these strategies work for them as well?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, dementia and Alzheimer's, it's hard because it's an irreversible process that once it starts, it's not like there's a cure. There is, however, a way to slow it down because what it is, it's you're losing gray matter. And so we want to prevent older people from losing gray matter in the brain. And by doing the way to do that is by being really, really active with our memory. So I was having a conversation with a guy and we were talking about reading. Oh, reading is a really good active way. And I was like, let's dissect that because when you're reading, it's really easy to read through something and like, oh, what did I just read? Mm-hmm. You weren't paying attention. You weren't being mindful during that. So a better way to approach reading would be reading it, closing it, and then summarizing it and saying out loud and being able to talk about it with one of your friends. That's a much more active way. Or, you know, maybe you want to brainstorm your own thoughts. Maybe you have your own dialogue, you journal. That's a much more active approach. Instead of just blatantly consuming information, how do you work with that? And how do you reproduce or recreate something new?
That makes sense.
Yeah, that does.
You're right. Because I think a lot of people think that reading is an active, you know, activity.
Way to engage your brain.
When really you're exactly, we talk about it all the time.
Reading can be super boring, right?
Yep. And even when it's not boring, it's still easy to drift off and start thinking about something else. And now you are almost increasing your lack of memory, decreasing your memory versus really engaging in it.
And I was going to say, I've also taught a class. It was with the Columbia Area Career Center. And there was one woman, she was in her 80s. And she was, I believe she had Alzheimer's. And, you know, the class was open to like any age group. So I had like nurses and health coaches in there. And so we were going at a pretty quick pace. And I noticed that she wasn't ready to go quite at that pace. So I worked with her one-on-one. And one of the things that she wanted to do was memorize a Bible verse. And so I worked with her again, took her to the side one-on-one, and we wrote out the Bible verse and we took each of the keywords and made visuals. So then we made a little movie in our mind of what would happen. And those are triggers for what she was supposed to remember. So our brain is so good and efficient that if we leave a breadcrumb trail, our brain can pick it up and put together the pieces really, really quickly. Our brains are fascinating. That's why I never get tired of talking about this topic. It's so cool.
No, you're right. It's an amazing muscle that we have.
Yeah. It is. So, and it can be retrained.
That's
the
crazy part.
Yeah. That's what's fascinating.
So you work with really all ages then.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's your youngest age?
Great question. The youngest that I've personally worked with has been like fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And here's what's really cool is I had a workshop and there was a boy, I want to say he was about sixth grade. And I was, and there it's full of adults and teens and kids and everything. And so we go through this exercise. It's the 10 rites of medication administration. So nurses have to remember these 10 ways to give patients their medicine correctly. And it was all these kind of like boring words all put together that really didn't mean very much. And I started going through the process of, okay, this is how we're going to associate pictures with each one. I got through about two or three. He raised his hand. He's like, I made a whole movie for everything. And he walked through the entire movie and told, I mean, he picked it up so quick. I was so proud of him.
That's awesome. Everything.
So, you know, kids, they're so uninhibited, the younger they are. So I really encourage, you know, listeners to really consider in these crucial young development years, like the skills that you can teach, and not that there's no hope for, you know, adults, because again, the guy who memorized 10,000 digits of pi, he was an adult when he did that. And he was late. He was a dyslexic in school. The school counselor said he had brain damage problems. He couldn't, he was really struggling with reading and writing. So again, it's, we can really box ourselves in. And so growth mindset is really important. Letting your kids learn these techniques earlier, the better, you know.
So. And I'm sure kind of having a lot of that negative self-talk regarding I can't remember anything, or my memory is poor, or I stink at this, or I struggle, that probably interferes with some of your good brain processing of information as well.
Absolutely. And there's studies done, Asian students versus Western students and the mentality in the classroom. That's why a lot of times Asians score so much higher in math classes, because a challenge is accepted and exciting and something to be tackled. Whereas here we think it's a fixed ability that we are born or not born with. And if we don't get it the first time, we must be stupid. It must not be our strength. And we really box ourselves in. So instead of saying, I can't, we say, I can't yet.
I can't yet. I love that too.
So you offer one-on-one sessions, group sessions, workshops. What are the best ways for people to reach out to you, to find you? Tell us a little bit about kind of your structure and how you do things.
Yeah. So the two big things are workshops and then one-on-ones. So the workshop is a 90-minute memory strategies workshop. The average participant that goes through my class doubles their memory in less than 90 minutes.
Wow.
People, again, triple and quadruple their memory because it's so powerful. And people just, you can pick it up really easily and you can make it as funny and weird and crazy as you want. And then the one-on-ones are more for like, I have a test, or I have the, you know, I've been struggling with this for a long time, or I need a little more individual attention and help. That's what the one-on-one sessions are for.
Okay.
And do you do all of those virtually?
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is awesome. That's great. I can think of a lot of different people that could benefit from your memory strategy services.
Well, and I was going to say, I think after we spoke the first time, you had told me about the workshop you were doing for the parents of teens with learning disabilities. And I immediately sent me the link and I sent it out to a group of parents that I thought would, you know, that I'd recently talked to that I thought would be excited about it. Right. I had several email me back saying, oh, thank you. This is so great. So I know that the need is there. And I think that parents, especially parents, feel so helpless, because you're exactly right. They know they can tell their kids what to do, but they don't know how to teach it. And they don't know how to give them the strategies.
And that's okay, because I mean, that's why we all have different jobs. I mean, we're not supposed to be an individual economy, and you know, no one lives on an island here.
And I will tell you too, I do think the schools don't think they do a great job of teaching these strategies. And I think it's lacking. And we've talked about that a lot. Study skills and learning strategies, they're just not emphasize. So this is huge. I'm super excited to know you and to know about what you do. And I feel like I could just do a workshop right now.
I know.
let's do it.
I want to do one as well. I'm excited about that as well. Thank you so much, Danielle, for sharing all of your knowledge and expertise and giving us a little taste into how we all, no matter where we are in the lifespan or what we're trying to memorize, we can improve our memory.
And I think too, like Abby and I, you clearly love what you do and you're excited about it. And that makes the whole process so much more fun. So that is awesome. So thank you. Thank you for being here. We will put the link to your website in our show notes. There's contact information on there for people to reach out to you. Email, phone, any of those are good?
Yep. Everything's good.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. If you guys have any questions, do not hesitate to reach out. You can reach us at letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com, or visit our brand new website, which is, Abby?
LTLDpodcast.com.
Oh, yay. One of these days I'll remember that. And it should be meaningful. All right, guys. We'll be back next week in two weeks with another great episode. Yeah. Hope you all have had a great day. And please reach out to Danielle. She is a plethora of memory information.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening, everyone. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.